Education is the passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. This is a quote from the great Malcolm X. I'm Raleigh.
And I'm Danielle.
And this is Unstuck, the special ed podcast.
The sweet, sweet sounds of Adobe Music.
Yep. Anything free, we're on it.
And non-royalty?
Is that correct, right. No royalties. We don't want to pay anything for it.
No. Oh, I see. That's what you said.
Anything for free. Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
How's the first week, 2 weeks of school?
It's actually been okay. We are lucky to have a really great group of teachers who are confident and strong and creative, and, you know, the kids are the kids. They have their challenges, and it's always hard to start a new year, and especially for kids who are new to the program, but we're going to get through it. Consistency is key.
Could you quote that for me?
Let me think. Probably every coach that ever coached a game.
I feel like my summer just went right into, because I worked partly over the summer, so it went right into fall. I feel like there was not any slowdown at all.
Yeah.
So, but teachers seem excited and ready, and hopefully we'll have a good school year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not every student is ready for school. We get the students who off the jump are not coming, don't want to come, or can't, you know, find the way to make it feel okay for them to come. Maybe they're anxious about it. Maybe parents have trouble getting themselves up, or the transportation isn't working out. You know, especially if you're not in a public school. Actually, though, even in Massachusetts, where we are, the public school system sometimes struggle to find enough buses for students. So I think there's problematic absences. This has been going on for quite a while. And I think that you and I were speaking about former students we've had, you know, talking maybe now 15 years ago, where school districts were much more concerned with absences and had some kind of like checks and balances. If a certain number of days went by and a student wasn't in school, then, you know, this was the protocol, what was going to happen. And I certainly have not seen that as strongly enforced in the past few years. So especially since good old COVID. Yeah.
I do think some of the anxiety and like increase in school refusal stuff, it felt like it started back in like 16, 17 almost, that you started seeing this like really prominence in anxiety, in like perfectionism. I mean, I think we've always seen pieces of it in our work in like the more restrictive environment, but just seeing it lead to school refusal and just really challenging times getting to school, even when you say like, come in for this preferred activity, right, or like, just come in. I mean, we had a student that I was like, loved art. And I was like, there are three girls that do this art group with this person who is not connected to education at all. She just does things like this. And so we couldn't even get her in for that 45-minute period to do that a couple times a week. It was really challenging.
Yeah, and I mean, we definitely have a myriad of reasons why kids are not able to get to school, and we have done a lot of modified schedules. I mean, some of it is, you know, it depends on the child. Like, sometimes it's a kid who just hasn't had school experience. They're really young, so we'll modify the school day. We might end their day earlier, start their day later. Really working with families to figure out what's going to make sense for them. Because I think, you know, it's in the short term, it feels, I'm sure for certain families, especially with kids with more challenging behavioral outbursts, it feels like not wanting to pick that battle. But the longer it goes on, you sort of have to think in the future of what does it lead to if you're 10 and refusing school and you're missing time and days and weeks and months are going by and you're not able to attend and aren't attending school. What does that portend for your high school years and beyond if it's easy enough for you to kind of decline you're able to get away with doing that.
It'd be interesting too to know, like, is it a certain age level? Or, like, we see a ton of middle schoolers, right?
Yeah.
Or like upper elementary, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, where absences just become so chronic. And, you know, it's hard to nip it right away because there are so many reasons behind it. It could be school anxiety, it could be peer relationships, it could be fear. And I'm just wondering how much COVID played into some of those reasons. Like, if you're out of school in, you know, if you were in first grade when you, when COVID hit, right. like, how is that affecting you now? Is it different than someone who was in sixth grade when COVID hit? Like, I'm just wondering if statistically, I'm sure. yeah. like, your age really mattered and your sort of trauma during that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't even couch it. I wouldn't even call it, not couch it. I wouldn't even call it refusal flat out. I would say attendance. I want to be more broad with it because I've also been seeing a lot more of where it's kind of acceptable to just pull your kid for a few weeks for a vacation or, hey, we just like decided not to go in today. Or, and like everybody deserves a vacation. They deserve a mental health day. But when school becomes kind of secondary, like we're just not considering that as important as this other activity we're doing, then what is that showing a child as far as the importance of education? It sort of makes it seem like it's not really that big of a deal. And again, there are so many reasons that could be leading into why a student doesn't come to school for a particular day, week, month, however long. But I think, I know at least for us, like we work really closely with districts and families to try to find ways for kids to be able to do that so that they're getting more confidence and feeling more connected and finding, like, I think we've talked in podcasts of the past about having connections to at least one adult and maybe starting to build relationships with a peer or two peers and finding a motivation to want to be in school that at least even in the short, you know, at first maybe it's just about that peer, but then you start to get into subjects that the student likes or some way to get them more involved. I know you have this in your, where you are. We certainly have had experience with people going to the child's house in the morning and trying to help coach how, you know, what's a behavioral plan or a coaching to get them to, you know, follow the steps to get to school and more do that more consistently.
And it's really, I think it's been really hard to find those people. So like in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of students, not just with school refusal, but transitioning to the van or needing just some help getting up out of bed. And I think there's such a fine line between what is a school district's responsibility and what is a parent's responsibility, or even like them gaining services through secondary insurance or Department of Mental Health or Department of Children and Families or DCYF, where you are, like, how much, I feel like there's so much pressure and so much expectation that the school can handle it all, because a parent, at least in our state, a parent can always refer back to, like, well, because they're not going to school, they're not getting an education, so this is your responsibility. And we're losing funding from, like, a public school perspective, so it's really hard to ride the line of, like, how we support these students, where our limit is, and we don't necessarily have the financial means to send every school refusal student
out of district
to an out-of-district placement, which we know is going to essentially be similar with a high staff ratio.
Yeah. Well, and how do you maintain it? Even if you could. So I know way back we did have that at our program where we were sending out, like, there were adults, obviously. There were staff that were working within the school program that would also go to a student's home whenever was needed. It was such a luxury to have, and I wish that we could have something like that more in more programs and more districts, because I think having somebody aligned with the school program that knows the student and then can go into the home and make relationships with the family members to try to encourage that. And I think it's building up the understanding within a family unit of, like, this is a team effort and how can we get this student to school. Just refusing and being maybe aggressive over that should not then get the student to just be able to not come to school.
Right.
And that's not, you know, no one's to necessarily, we don't want to cause, you know, say someone's to blame for that. But I think it's just when you see that a student, a kid has that type of power to tell a parent or tell a guardian or tell a district, like, I'm just not going to school. And if I have to, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
It's scary, but I think we have to be able to respond to that without just accepting that that's what's going to happen. And now what's that kid doing all day long?
I found a quick statistic about our state. So pre-pandemic 2018-2019, 12.9% rates of chronically absent students. In 2021-2022, during the pandemic, it was 27.7%. And in 2022, 2023, it has gone back down. So it's like in the middle a little bit to 22.2%. But that's still a quarter of students. But what you're saying
is, yeah, you said, right. So you went 12% to 22, essentially.
Yeah.
Like take COVID out of it. It's pre and post COVID. It went up 10%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's outrageous. And, you know, I think this is something, it'd be interesting. I'm sure there's a study out there. We probably should find it. What are the ramifications for someone? So like, let's say they started following a kid at age 10, 12, what happens if they're able, you know, or even if you're saying, what was the first year you said on there?
Not 18, 19.
So if you go back to 2018 and you're talking 6 years ago, and let's say the kid was 13 or 12, now they're 18, 19. What happened if they continued to refuse? What were the outcomes for that student? I mean, it's very concerning. I sometimes can't get over the idea that there doesn't seem to be more alarm bells going off for this, and it's widespread. I think we used to be able to say, well, it's this. There are a few of our students that are in this boat. It now feels like a larger number, as you're saying, close to a quarter of the students. And again, we have kids that just miss days for no real understandable reason. Obviously, they have to give some type of reason, but I feel like, is anyone following up to say, well, was the child sick? Did you just not have transportation? Was the parent sick? What's the reason? And again, what is this child doing all day long?
Well, and it's a systems issue too. I think there's, so if students are chronically getting unexcused absences, for example, because no one's asking the question, but the parent then just decides that she's going to go to the doctor and say, oh, my kid's been absent despite going on vacation, whatever. Mm-hmm. The doctor does not want liability. So the doctor will automatically then say, oh, here's a doctor's note excusing all absences. It's something that we're running into at our high school level, where like parents don't want kids to have high absences on students' transcripts mm-hmm. for when they apply to college.
Right.
But the student is coming in late every day, losing credit because they're coming in late every day. So, and now they have the chronic absences as well. And so their fear is that a 4-year school is going to look at this and say, ooh, this kid doesn't
go to school. It's also fascinating to me. Like, I have two thoughts about it. One is, you know, and if you're missing this much schooling as a high school student, why would anyone think you're going to go to school as a college student?
Right.
And how would you have the knowledge, the scores, all of the assignments completed to even pursue that path if you're missing so much school?
Well, and that's what the doctor's note is doing. It's like, oh, please excuse any time. And it's so vague that like, this is not reasonable. This is not a reasonable request. How is the student learning? I mean, like I said, I think there needs to be some huge overhaul in the Department of Education system in general. And we've talked about that a ton. Like there are bigger issues than school by school, district by district, and school by school. It's almost impossible to hit this head on without the funding backup, the wraparound services, all of these other pieces that are everyone's responsibility. It's the community's responsibility. It's parents, it's schools, it's outside providers. I mean, I think it's going to take a lot of collaborative efforts and creativity to help these students.
And financial resources.
And financial resources, yeah, to get back into the groove of things.
Well, and, you know, this could be for another day, but I think reimagining what school should really look like for kids. I think in the modern era, there should be some rethinking of what should be required for kids. How can we be more creative? How can we make school more engaging? And not so structured in the format that we've always known it to be. Obviously hitting on all the core curriculum, but finding ways to make it more engaging, which leads into what do you do if a student is refusing school and a parent is at their wit's end over it? And I think I would always suggest approaching it when possible. Obviously, every situation is different, but I would recommend thinking about it like almost like a behavior modification plan or a desensitization for anxiety type of situation, depending. I mean, I feel like a lot of these stem from anxiety in school. School just not being a place where this child feels maybe valued, or, and whether that's true or not, it just is their perspective, right? I don't feel like this is meaningful to me. I don't get something out of this that feels like I now can contribute to the, you know, the space with my peers. Maybe they have learning challenges that just feel like it's too hard to overcome, so it's easier not to engage and just to avoid.
Well, I also wonder too if it's some of it. I think about our kids with autism. Mm-hmm. I think about our kids with ADHD and executive functioning, like really the more severe side of it, like that difficulty transitioning and initiating tests. So like getting themselves out of bed to shower, to do the next step. Like, I feel like there's like this anxiety component, and then there's this, and it's not motivation, everyone. It is like part of your neurology that like they can't actually, as someone who has difficulty initiating tasks, they can't like get over the hump of the next step. And so I feel like sometimes those kids are even harder.
Yeah.
Because it's not even desensitizing.
No,
it's like,
right.
It's like this, how do you get them to like, how do you motivate them? It's not motivation.
Well, so I think you can look at it from, I'm trying to speak broadly because I think there's so many nuanced reasons why, but I think you could take, so if you looked at it from a kid who's anxious because of social reasons or et cetera, et cetera, how do you desensitize the idea of school?
Yeah.
And it's really targeting, the success is just showing up.
Right.
And how do you motivate a student, incentivize a student to show up and then start to feel the confidence and feel like they belong? So are you linking the student up with an adult that they get to kind of just really slowly get to know? Is it a small group of kids that maybe have shared interests? How do you kind of incentivize that? I keep saying that word, but you know, getting somebody that to feel like a connection. Yes, buy-in and connection. And it, you can't be tackling 17 things at once. It's really just getting them to school. So if they got in the car and they combed their hair and they showed up, and then 5 minutes later they said, I can't handle this, I'm leaving. Well, they got in the car and they showed up for 5 minutes. And if you can keep building on that, I think the executive functioning avenue, or, you know, whether that's cut together with the anxiety, which obviously it often is, if it's a, if that's really the issue, how do you break everything down and make it so that it's digestible for that student to understand and help a parent or guardian understand how to structure the morning so they feel like they can get through those tasks and get through the routine to then get to school, and breaking it down that way. But, you know, I think it's finding kind of the drilling down a little bit as to the root cause, excuse me, and then finding ways to create the buy-in and create the incentivization, and thinking about progress as just building on, even if it's small increments. It doesn't all have to be, well, you know, they came to school for 5 minutes, whoop-de-doo. No, that's better than no minutes. So let's keep building on that and finding success that way.
Well, I think your point of not working on 17 things at once, I think it's really hard for teachers, you know, because of the pressures that they're under to get through the curriculum, to make sure kids are getting the grades, to make sure they're passing the state test, which again is out for a whole nother episode in terms of reimagining school. A paper to pencil computer test where you're answering questions is not helpful for all students to know their true learning level. But, you know, they're under all these pressures. So it's like, well, how are we going to get them? How are we going to get them caught up? How are we going to teach them? And to engage them in the conversation to say, like, you're allowed to let that go. Like,
yes,
we're just focusing
the permission
on, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to let this go. It's okay that, you know, I also think most of the kids that are school refusal kids are really bright.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, the cases that I've worked on, for the most part, it's been like kids that could catch up easily.
Yes.
So I was like, let's not even worry about it. Right. Let's just get the kid to school.
And the perception of them, their own self-perception of their skill set and their abilities might be less than what they actually are capable of. So then that becomes the mental block. I mean, obviously every case by case situation is different, but I think the larger takeaway could be drilling down, finding some causes, and really creating a structure where the parent and the guardian feels like they are heard and supported, which is not always easy. And again, some of it could be that you are dealing with a parent who also can't get themselves up in the morning.
Right.
I think we have that case happening often where the parent says, I'm sorry, I overslept. I didn't get Jimmy ready for school. So he didn't get up. And then the bus came and left and I can't get him to school.
Right.
And how often is that happening? And again, what is happening in that household while this student is not in school? What's going on all day long? How are they keeping themselves busy? How are they engaging their mind? And so that's a larger concern. Again, that's another case of how do you help a parent to get themselves together to get their student.
Well, I think about parents who have multiple jobs and have low income. Yeah. And so I think about that as a whole nother, because this, there's no issue with the student trying to get to school. It really is like a parent just worked a 16-hour day and it's up to the student to, or they work an overnight shift, and it's up to them to get themselves out of bed and to school every morning. And if you're in upper elementary school and middle school, like that's a really hard ask, but a realistic one that, you know, a lot of families are dealing with across the country.
I think it always goes back to, though, finding that adult that can relate to that student. And I know we've said that from the beginning. And it, you know, again, it's sometimes easier said than done, but I think there's always somebody that can connect. I work in a program with some of the most complicated cases with students who have felt failure at every level up until they're with us. And there's always a connection, almost always. I mean, very rarely is it just there's nobody and nothing and there's no incentive or buy-in. There's always something. And, you know, is everything sustainable? No, nothing's perfect, but you can find ways to be creative and find it to be sustainable. And I know it's easier in a smaller program, but I think that exists if you're putting in, if you have the resources and the bodies to put in that effort, you can do that.
Well, and I know I've told this before on previous episodes a long time ago, but I remember going to a training or something and it was a principal speaking and they said, before the school year starts, we have whatever orientation or start and every teacher in an auditorium and we go through every single kid to make sure that each student has a connection. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, that's a problem.
Yep.
And we find a way to make that work because that's what helps motivate kids to get to school, to be in school, to have someone they feel safe with. So,
yeah. So easy.
So yeah, everything is so easy. I feel like these are some of the hardest, most challenging students because it's so, it's unpredictable.
And it's multi-layered. It's complicated. Yeah. It's not just about a kid saying, I'm not coming to school today. Like there's a lot more to it.
There's so much more to it. Well, on that note, I think you have a motivator to get kids out of bed.
So as we've transitioned to doing some reviews, because we just enjoy it and find it funny and have seen on other social media outlets, people doing this. So we were thinking what would be just in a playful way, what could be something to get your body and your brain moving in the morning to maybe want to wake up and go to school. And we thought, what about a trampoline? So here's a person who gave 3 out of 5. And actually I'm impressed that this person gave three because anyway, the title is much too difficult to set up. So you know what you're getting here, but I was looking for a trampoline to replace one I had been using regularly for 8 years. So kudos for using a regular trampoline for 8 years I bought this one with no fear at all about needing to set it up because I had set up my previous one quite easily. When I got this one, I followed directions and had a friend come over to help me. Now, granted, we are not the strongest of people, though I work out at a gym and lift weights, but we thought we'd be able to do it. We tried and tried to get the trampoline to unfold, but it was impossible. I went across the street and asked a much younger, very fit friend to help. So she came over and 3, in all caps, of us worked on it with no luck at all. The only thing that happened was that my floor got a permanent cut in it. We finally gave up. I called the company. They suggested I send them a video to set up. So I set up my tripod and used my Apple Watch to trigger a video of 2 of us trying to set this thing up. That is commitment right there.
It really is.
I sent it in. 2 days later, nothing in response. This person is not patient.
No.
I finally decided to pack the thing up, return it to the UPS store, and buy a different trampoline. Good luck with the setup if you buy this one. Then there is an update. When we were unable to set it up, I contacted customer support. They told me to submit a video, which I did within a half hour. No response. Finally, a week later, they responded that sometimes the pins are put in backwards, and I should check that. Sorry. This response was way too late. Did they think I'd just sit there staring at it for a week? Glad I returned it. Poor customer service support. Had they gotten in touch right away, I might have kept the thing. Their loss.
I'm so blown away by 3 stars.
I know. That to me sounds like one all star. Day long.
And you know what? It feels like one of those reviews where at the beginning you'd say, if I could give this 0 stars,
yes,
I would.
Yes.
I feel like it's
so
one
now
of those
don't try to trick me with your 3 stars. Yeah. Like you liked something about it. You never bounced on it once. Don't give me that.
Yeah. What did you like about it? Quick delivery? I don't know. I feel like that's tricky. Well, find us on all our social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And we will see you. Not see you. We won't see anyone.
We'll.
You know what? Uncut. Raw and uncut, everyone. We hope everyone has a great start to the school year.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.